The series is over, but we're not quite done. We are the AfterBuzz TV Voltron Legendary Defender After Show, and we're here to talk to you guys about Season 8 as a whole. We're going to talk about character arcs. We're going to talk about the end of reality. We're going to talk about some of our favorite moments, and we're going to talk about them with two very special guests. So let's get this ball rolling, and team, it's time to form Voltron.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. We are the AfterBuzz TV Voltron Legendary Defender After Show. This is the Season 8 review. We are going to talk about Season 8 as a whole. We are going to have a grand old time doing it. I have with me Green Lion Megan Salinas.
Hey, everybody.
I'm Black Lion Katie Cullen. And we have two wonderful, fantastic returning guests that we are so thrilled to have in studio, our showrunners, Laura Montgomery and Joaquim Dos Santos.
How's it going?
Woo!
Good to see you guys.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. We're happy to be back and talking about the final season.
Yeah, and we have to sort of give a pre-warning that we haven't really watched it in a while, so we're not really sure what Season 8 is anymore.
Yeah. I refreshed myself on the episode thumbnails on Netflix, so at least I have like a
and they spoiled
slight reminder.
No, just me. Things I will never be over when Netflix marketing screws up that badly. Well, welcome back. Yeah. Before we get started, we are going to do a little bit of housekeeping. As always, we have the live chat going. For those of you who are watching live on YouTube, we have the hashtag. For those of you who are watching live or listening later, that hashtag on Twitter is ABTVVoltron. If you've got something to say, throw it in the hashtag, throw it in the live chat. You may well get a shout out. I will say that we do check the hashtag throughout the week, and it lasts longer than the live chat does. So art, links, fun stuff, throw it in there if you want it to be a little more permanent. And as always, we have our Tavern of Lions house rule. Be nice or get out. There we go. Yeah. Everyone has opinions. I firmly believe that you can express your opinions in a respectful manner. And if you find yourself unable to do that, you will be banned from the channel. No more AfterBuzz animation for you. Bye-bye.
Wow.
Most of you have been pretty dang good at that, which I appreciate. Keep it up, and we will continue. Season 8, though, you guys.
Oh,
the
my
series
goodness.
Finale. What was releasing this last season like for you?
It was
exhausting.
Yeah. Releasing it was real easy because we were like out of, you know,
it's done.
Out of work for like a month. We were like, yeah, man, we were relaxing. Yeah. We were kind of like, things were nice and slow. Making it was a whole different scenario. This was where we really procrastinated a lot on a few things. Like, we thought we had this beautiful idea that we'd have all this time at the end where there's no new episodes coming up that we have to make. And, like, we'll have all this time to, like, reboard all these things that need to be reboarded and focus all this attention.
Right.
And we had none of that time. And I don't even know how that happened. I think what we forgot to realize was doing our regular producer duties takes the whole day. And the end of the day was when we did all our storyboard stuff.
I think, I don't know how the math worked in our head, but I think we assumed that, like, as soon as season 7 was done, we reverted back to being, like, storyboard artists or something. And that we'd just be like, yeah, we'll just, like, draw and stuff again.
Yeah, we'll have all this time just, like,
did not
the,
come to pass.
The finale the best it can be. Like, yeah. I remember us talking with Eugene, like, oh my god, Eugene, when we're done with, like, this last batch of episodes, can you imagine how much time? And he's like, yeah, it's gonna be so great. And then, like, it was none of that because we were still making the freaking show and finishing, like, episodes just in editing and in post.
The balancing act was still happening.
Yeah.
We had, like, three spinning plates at a time.
One day, I'm gonna figure it out.
Sending it in at 11:59 before it's due.
We're gonna be like 80-year-olds, like, we figured it out! And they're gonna be like, what is this, like, crazy old person doing here trying to make a cartoon?
Yeah.
That's what we're all trying to do. Collectively, we're making a cartoon.
That's right.
So you had a lot of story threads to bring together and resolve, as well as a lot of new information to give us. Was there anything that got lost in the shuffle? Was there anything you would have liked to emphasize a little more that there just wasn't time for it?
A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's tough. We had this massive Enerva backstory to sort of really set up and queue up, and we were able to do that a little bit sort of leading up, but not. Season 8 was really our big push to get that all set up.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know, that came at the cost of, like, I would have loved to have spent more time with the MFE pilots and sort of figure out what made them tick. And we got a little bit of that with, you know, like, day 47, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. There was stuff like that, like incidental side characters that we just were, we were super fond of.
Yeah, it's one of those really tricky things about having a show this big is you introduce all these characters, and we had all these great ideas of, like, they're all going to come into play in these many different ways, and so we'd be kind of in the writer's room with the writers, like, talking about all these things, and then slowly but surely, as we needed to just kind of whittle it down and make it understandable and get the strongest points across, like, these little... things would fall away, and so suddenly you'd lose that kind of side character involvement. Right. Like, we had this idea of, like, Slav was going to kind of be with them and figuring out all of this, like, crazy inner reality traveling stuff, and, like, he would know all the realities, and he would know exactly where to go. He'll be in the cockpit with him. It's going to be crazy. Right. And then we're like, oh, no, we need to just, like, do we really need Slav?
Yes, you do.
With all the paladins. Like, we love him, but that might be a little awkward. So, honestly, just, like, the finale itself, just that last episode, like, we've always, with every finale we've done, in our three, like, big seasons, we, you know, Zarkon we consider to be one season, Lotor is the second season, and then this big, like, Sendak Earth / Unnerva arc, each of those had a big finale, and every time we would write that big finale... and we would run out of time. Like, we would override it.
Right.
And I would always try to say, like, guys, we need, like, at least an act of wrap-up. And then for the big series finale, like, it would have been awesome to have an entire episode where we could just dedicate to, like, tying up loose ends. But you can't do that. We, you know, we wrote an episode, and then we got notes like, hey, there's only action in Act 1. Can we have action in Act 2 and 3? And we're like, no, we can't.
Like, We gotta wrap up
78 episodes. This isn't just a 26 episode wrap up. This is a 78 episode wrap up.
But when you look at that final episode, it really is just the first act of, like, fight stuff, and the rest is pretty much wrap up.
Yeah.
I mean, we were just saying to each other, we wished that the conversation in Limbo almost could have had its own episode. Awesome would that have been to really, like, explore, deep dive into a nervous POV and make that transition when she, you know, sort of decides to go along with Allura, sell that.
Yeah,
stuff
that just hit the kind of cutting room floor storyboard wise, just because we didn't have the time, and so we're looking like it's a kids show technically still, even though we're trying to make it more than that. You have a scene that's basically an act long that's just in a white floaty space with people talking about, like, you know,
bigger emotional stuff. Yeah.
And, you know, letting that go any longer than that is just like, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Kids are sleeping right now.
Well, it's what's interesting though, is that it seems like we're in a, I don't know, sort of social situation now where those types of shows are becoming more and more of a reality. And we were on this, like, weird precipice where we were always working on shows that were pushing the boundaries, and maybe Voltron was on the tipping point. It seems like now animation is way, it's broadening, like, every day. Absolutely. So hopefully we'll be able to see more shows that can, like, lean in and get really, really character-centric and still have all the sci-fi, like, big action stuff to go along with it.
Yeah. I was telling Joaquim how, you know, we were just talking about how during our time on Voltron, we started in a very specific point in the industry where we were very used to working inside of our boys' toys animation box and trying to push the boundaries.
Right.
And those were literally the only jobs that were available to us because those were the only shows that studios had in animation. And during our time on Voltron, like, Castlevania came out and changed the landscape. And now suddenly there's all these studios. Netflix opened its own studio here. We were making a show through DreamWorks for Netflix. And now, you know, we could have just gone straight to Netflix and made a show that was more geared towards, like, young adults and more, but
we were
that
like
wasn't
trying
available
to, like,
to us,
like,
when we
sneak
started
it in the back door. Like, this is secretly a much deeper show, everybody.
But it's exciting that because that's it's a reality that we didn't know if it would ever be a thing because we were working on Korra, and we would say to ourselves, like, this is the last time we're ever going to get this chance, you guys. Like, Korra is like a crazy creature where Nickelodeon knows they're not making it for kids. It has no toy tie-in. Right. It has no consumer products tie-in. It's just meant to be kind of an art project at the studio. And so it was allowed to be this very mature, different show for an audience that they didn't really understand.
Right.
And so when it was over, we're like, all right, well, back to the old ways. But, you know, we were prepared for it, and we, you know, we definitely had more of like a fun, campy vibe to Voltron, but we still wanted to try to push those bigger things.
We maximized as much of the, like, sort of pathos and sort of hero's journey and sort of deep character introspective stuff as we could.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's funny, too, because it just seems, maybe even to ourselves, but it seemed like the lines got blurred even in how it was received by the fandom and received by even like the media outlets. It was sort of like on the cusp of being talked about, you know, with other shows that were way more mature, like, oh, the Game of Thrones of it all. And it's like,
we didn't kill that many people. Oh, we did kill that many people. We ended reality.
More people than Game of Thrones.
So we did. We pushed the boundaries.
Yeah. And we'd find ourselves getting compared to shows that, you know, were like live action shows where like, oh, they should have done it like this. And it's like that would be awesome if that were an option any way. But us to consider our like little robot lion show being made, us trying to make this show for as many people as possible under the guidelines of a boys' toys show, it's never going to be able to have like quite the ability to push farther that like a live action like Walking Dead on AMC that's at 10 o'clock at night specifically for adults where you don't have to worry about how are my kids going to enter this.
If your kids are watching Walking Dead, you have other problems.
Either that or you're the best parent in the world.
Disagree.
Agree to disagree.
But was it
that sort of desire to push the boundaries that sort of resulted in this climax where, yeah, we have the big action set piece leading up to it, but ultimately the resolution is one that's brought up from empathy and understanding.
I think so. And I think I will say DreamWorks was incredibly patient with us with regards to us broaching a lot of these subjects. They were, you know, maybe still figuring things out in terms of how they would approach, you know, other topics that we can get into a little later. But I would say the finale is almost, I don't know, I don't want to say unlike anything that you would see in other like-minded shows, like let's say like Transformers or Power Rangers or something that like Voltron was by outward appearances being compared to. But it was something I think really exciting for us to be able to explore, because we did create villains and create heroes that worked within this very kind of like shades of gray spectrum. There was black, there was white, but we played in this really weird, morally ambiguous zone a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, it's important for kind of audiences of every age group to see that.
And, you know, we also came from working on shows like Avatar The Last Airbender and Korra, which very much pushed those boundaries as well. And were extremely groundbreaking you know, children's programming. And it was, you know, not something that was coming out of Western animation.
No.
So, I mean, I would say we learned an insane amount from Mike and Brian.
We just had to reverse engineer that into the Goofy Cat. You know what I mean? That was our, like, little trick to the industry. It was like, how do we do all that cool stuff that we were able to do in those shows and sort of cram it into this package?
And honestly, like, a lot of it was just us knowing that our ability to, like, show everything on screen, like every type of representation we might have wanted to show, we might not get our way on everything, but at least through having these larger lessons, we can still push those messages of acceptance and of understanding and of like looking beyond. And you know, those are just important messages. I think like everyone kind of learns them in their life in their own way. And I don't know, like, I was such a little, like, asshole kid. That, like, I, you know, didn't understand empathy. I didn't understand why people cried when they were happy. I was like, why would you cry when you're happy? Right, like, you're happy. And then, of course, now I'm the woman who watched a T-Mobile commercial today and friggin' cried. So
I want to know what this commercial
was. It was beautiful. I will describe it to you after, because okay. I don't want to take it.
But, advertising other brands.
But, you know, there are things that come through, I think, life experience and through learning. And our paladins had that kind of on steroids right. with their whole Voltron journey.
Their journey yeah.
So, you know, to really show how that manifested and how they learned from it was, it's important. And it, I think it's just important for kids to see it, even if they're not there in their life yet, to know when they get there, they look back and like, oh,
that was sort of happening for that character, yeah.
To be able to see it happen to someone else and mm-hmm. someone that you're invested in, because, oh, it's Lance, he's my favorite. And then you watch him grow from this brat
right.
to the right arm of Voltron.
Right.
Like, yeah. Awesome. Actually, I think this is a good point to start talking about character arcs in this season.
So. Yeah.
Let's talk Let's about talk. Onerva.
Oh,
let's talk about this horror terror.
She
is amazing and horrifying and not the villain I expected to make it to the very end, but here we are. I'm
though,
impressed.
Were you at all sympathetic to her and her
100%. It's so, she was one of the most fascinating characters to watch, because once she gets her memory back and she realize, you know, contextually speaking, we as the audience find out who she is at the same time she does,
right.
you slowly start to realize how much of this entire scenario she's responsible for,
yeah.
whether mm-hmm. inadvertently or not.
Yeah.
And so it's so fascinating, watch her refusal to take responsibility for her part in it, but still desperately wanting that, you know, the human connections that she was denied. You know, human, so
yeah.
to speak.
Sure.
I'll tell you.
I'll tell you.
It's telling that the perfect world that she found to slot herself into is the dimension where she died.
Oh. Yeah.
Where
she
this
was taken
whole,
out of the equation.
Yeah, it's possible that it's a dimension where the comet never happened because Voltron was obviously a surprise.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The alliances were still there, but the giant robots were, you've brought this monster down upon us, what are you?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's telling that that's the perfect dimension that she found, is the one where she died super early on.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but her, to obtain the perfect world, she was also basically willing to kill infinite versions of her son and her husband in order to get what she deemed she was worthy of.
Well, that's sort of like the misdirected love, right? Like, she was in one hand looking for the acceptance and the love of a family that she never had, but she was blind to everything else, all the other chaos that she was causing as a result.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is interesting. I feel,
yeah,
you know,
it's an interesting character. It's not necessarily, like, the most, like, honorable by any means, but, you know, characters, when you can understand why they want it, but then you see them doing things that are absolutely unacceptable to get it, it's like, you know it's wrong, but
right.
you know, you can kind of understand.
We're hearing crackle in our ears,
yeah.
everybody. That might be me. I'm just going to go ahead and put it on the floor.
It's probably mine.
It's your phone case doesn't like the table.
No, seriously,
it's super weird, and I'm pretty sure it's your phone case. Sorry, I was trying to do that silently, so
no,
I didn't interrupt you.
I'm just going to call attention to it. Please carry on. Sorry.
No, we were talking about Onerva or something.
Great podcasting.
But there's something really incredible, like, interesting to me about her kind of victim mentality, where she really won't accept that like a lot of this is her fault. She just looks at, basically, like, she's lost her whole life. She's witnessed it, not knowing that it was hers, realizing, looking back on all the things she should have done differently, that she could have done differently. And it's kind of, you know, she's kind of trying to point that blame of, like, well, if I, the quintessence hadn't, you know, she'll turn it on everyone except her,
right.
even though she was right there, you know, kind of diving into this whole quintessence research and bringing this whole thing about.
It's Voltron's fault.
But it was also cool, I think, you know, one of the things that I was really surprised of in the room, I don't really remember how it came up, was the notion that when she shows up on this reality and then Voltron follows, they're like, why have you brought this like demon monster to our world? It's a crazy sort of flip of the script where really, you know, Voltron was doing good, but in a lot of people's eyes, and it's, you know, in a certain people's eyes, it could be seen as
I mean, you wouldn't know.
Bringing
you wouldn't
chaos
know any better. Well, yeah. Voltron was the road beast in that scenario.
That's right.
Exactly. Like, look at this giant monstrosity that's going to wreak havoc on our planet.
Because Minerva parked hers out back.
Right.
She was smart enough to store it, you know, off planet. Oink, oink.
And we were talking a little bit before this about, you know, how there's this portion of the fandom that's like, how could you, like, justice for Lotor and you know, where's his redemption and how could you kill him off? And obviously, you know, we feel we're coming from a point of, you know, he's gone so far off the deep end that death was really the only sort of salvation that he had on some level. But it's interesting that it was Lotor in that reality. There was a version of Lotor that was, you know, unaffected and uncorrupted and you know, doesn't come from that kind of horrific background that our Lotor did, that was in essence kind of kicked off everything being turned on Minerva's plans.
Yeah. It really does highlight how a person's, like, the circumstances that they find themselves in really do have an effect on the person that they become.
Right.
But it's also a matter of choice. Like, this, these awful, awful things happen to him. Like, there's no question that Lotor would have turned out better had his parents been physically capable of empathy.
Of course. But
they're kind of zombies, so it's an issue.
There's nature
versus
nurture.
Not the weirdest thing I've said today. That's not the weirdest thing I've said today. But even after all that happened, he made the choice to go, you know what? Fine. Violence it is. And leaned super hard into that curve, even while he was still going, oh no, I don't want to mess with my Galra heritage. Oh no, I'd rather be an Altaian. Oh no, this. Like,
right. And that's, I think, that non-cleanliness of, like, where he fits in like, the villain category or the hero category or the character that's going to be redeemed, or that is an area that we like to play in and sometimes does not have the answers that everybody's sort of hoping for, you know?
Well, we like to blur those lines, but sometimes, you know, the lines are blurred, therefore the fans have their own interpretations. But ultimately, it's a story, guys. And
right,
not
right,
everyone
right.
gets to have the happy ending in the story.
I will say he was beautiful. He had beautiful hair.
He did.
And him and Allura together look beautiful together.
Mm-hmm. This is very true.
You're treading on some
but
dangerous
I will, I, you know, that isn't from a story perspective a sort of place to work back from,
I mean,
if that makes
but
any
I mean,
sense.
Like, you ever see those beautiful flowers and then you go to smell them and they smell like death itself? Oh. That's kind of that.
Oh. It's a hell of a point.
I still ship it, but no, it does not work within the framework of the narrative in any capacity.
Sure. Look, there is a universe in which it happened and it was fine.
100%.
This is not that
universe.
That's
the beauty of
multiverse
our,
stories, yes. There's an AU where it totally worked out and everyone was happy.
And endless comics to be written. Fanfics. Go crazy.
Yeah.
Well, and ultimately, it's the memory of what he was trying to do that brings Minerva around.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there was goodness in him. Like, you can't deny that. But some actions are, you know, really your only way out.
You kind of
from a
gotta,
story perspective is you gotta kind of pay the ultimate price.
Well, and for Lotor, there was some good in him, but cool motive, still murder.
still
lots and lots of murder.
It totally involved a ton of murder.
Yeah. Pretty sure all of the battery Altaians are super dead because I don't think anyone else found that moon.
Right.
Talk to Banthor if you want to hear about why Lotor doesn't get a redemption arc. I'm sure Ramel would love to hear your thoughts on that.
By the way, when that episode came out and when we were getting, like, the recording, we couldn't stop saying to each other, Bandor! Bandor! Like, we love that read so much. Like, we love that name.
Bandor.
Oh, Bandor.
Well, there were a lot of fun, talking about that, there were a lot of fun references to the original series in this season. Mm. Like, at the very beginning, we actually have a clip from the original series playing.
It doesn't sound like that. God bless Bex and their
She's
ability to sound like that.
Yes.
We, you know, we love the original show, and we always had this silly idea because we play with so many different realities that, like, what if in our reality the show it's technically live action to them and it's being made about them, and so it's like, because here we are making a show that's based on that show,
right.
And I was like, well, what if that show is based on
it's
our show?
Super meta. It's like inverse meta.
It was just funny to us that, like, we could work it in. We always wanted to work it in some way, just because, you know, we love it and we like to pay homage to it. But that, like, we joked about it, and we actually had a few more references, like, in the episode. I ended up way super overwriting that episode, so we cut a bunch of stuff, like, you know, the rookie writer mistake.
It was all gold. It was all gold. They just had to go. Yes.
You have to kill your darling.
Say that. But there was a scene where they were gonna see, like, the Sven Dies scene. And, like, she wasn't there, though. But, like, I think it was, like, Hunk and Keith were, like, right. at a little viewing party with, like, right. Hunk's family. And and then they see the scene, and they're like, oh, wow, they're really taking some liberties. Like, they were making their own story about the Paladins, and it was just...
A space hospital.
I would have expired. I would not be here right now if that had happened, because I would have died laughing.
Would have been doing the show on my own this season.
Yeah, it never made it. It never even really made it past, like, the roughs and storyboard, because, again, like, I so overwrote that episode that we just started hacking stuff out.
There was also Tim Hedrick did an amazing pidge in the room, and a lot of, like, us being so obsessed with was with him just going like, like, if ever something, like, was, like, confusing, he would just go, wah! We gotta bring in more OG Pidge.
Yeah, Bex's ability to emulate that voice.
Oh, she nailed it.
Oh, yeah, I know. They are just wonderful.
They're amazing.
But just, yeah, we got to do that. We got to have the little nod to, like, Pidge's outfit and Allura's outfit that, like, kind of goes by real quick.
Those are so fun.
That was pretty great.
That montage. And then we got Chip at the end, too.
Yeah.
Vehicle Voltron.
I know, like, we're the biggest trolls ever. We're like, here's a show we're never going to make.
Yeah, that's right.
That in the epilogue about they made the next generation of Voltron, and it's like,
it's hey, happening.
We queued it up real nice for whoever wants to do it, by
you
the way.
You know, if anyone wants to take that. But we, you know, So I'm just going to admit, I never watched Vehicle Voltron.
How dare you?
I know, like,
same. I had to Google what Chip was.
But, you know, like, I did my research, and, like, there's a cool idea to it there. And my husband and I were recently watching Pat Labor. Is that how they call it? That's how they call it on the thing, Pat Labor.
That's what I've always called it.
They call Labors. Pat Labor is what we'd always call it.
Yeah.
But they're called Labors, and it's this, like, cop mech show, and it's really clever, like, and it's fun because they have mechs and they're cops, and they just kind of episode to episode do cop things. And I was like, well, if you're gonna make a Vehicle Voltron, you've got these three teams, they could basically be like cops and mechs, and, like,
just describe my dream show. Oh my god.
But yeah, we queued it up, and Chip, I loved the idea of, like, Pidge's one goal in life, you know, going out into the world and seeing sentient AI, like, to create one of her own.
Right.
And she's doing it, like, with her brother. And it's this, like, nice bonding moment. And then the fact that Chip was, like, what, Pidge's cousin or something?
That's right.
Cousin or brother. I believe it was brother. But it was, like, in the loosest.
Yeah.
It was really
it was cousin.
It might have been cousin.
Well, I mean, Sven had a brother that they found later on.
It's a little hard because they started cutting together different series to continue Voltron, so it's hard to say.
It just made a lot of sense that, you know, she would pursue that, and that would be her passion. Technology is her passion. And then, you know, with her family and them obviously being such a huge part of the Galaxy Garrison, with Voltron kind of, you know, taking itself out of the equation, they would then
sort of take up the mantle.
Yeah. And then
think there's a pitch, though, where Chip ends up taking over Earth as, like, the sentient AI and becomes the villain a thousand years later.
And it's
for
the singularity.
I was just about to say, like, the dark version is that, like, the Voltron that Sam and everyone creates ultimately is, like, you know,
becomes
the police, and then, like, they become, like, the power hungry Earth of the galaxy.
There's a scrappy Galra resistance.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they flip the script and become the good guys. Yeah, that's good.
There you go.
Living long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I don't have enough time to get into how much I love this AU because we are going to run out of time here in a hot second. There's so much I want to talk about, and I'm having such a hard time deciding things.
Talk about Allura.
Oh, Allura. She had such a rough season. Incredibly well telegraphed. Very rough. Yeah.
For sure. I think, we knew, like, coming down to it, that with Enerva being the final villain, and basically we have two female Altaian people who have had a very similar thing happen to them. They've lost their families. They've lost, like, the life they knew. And it's just two very different ways of how they handle
it. That's right. They've had very, in a weird way, similar circumstances and come and approached it from very different angles.
It's a storyline we wanted to originally do kind of with Keith and Lotor back when, like, our kind of original story pitch where Shiro was going to kind of exit the show. Keith was going to be here. He was going to stay with the team so he wouldn't have jetted off and gone to the Blade of Marmora. And it was going to be a big, like, Lotor season where you've got Lotor, half Altaian, half Galra. Keith, half Galra, half human. Yeah. And it's like, you've got these two. The duality of those two. And, like, how does it work out? And, you know, you see Lotor seems like the guy who has it all together in the beginning, but then ultimately Keith evolves and becomes a better person. So we got to play a little bit of that here with Allura and Enerva, who, very similar situations, but Allura going about it, like, the way that it's painful to her. She did lose her entire family. She lost her planet, her home, and even now there's that sense in the first episode where she realizes once this war ends, she might not even have, like, her Voltron family. Right. It's like, they have families. They're like, what are they going to do? They don't need me anymore. And it's this kind of very, it's selfish in a way, but it's beautiful because she can feel that way. But she's not acting on it. She's not sabotaging
she's the war effort to feel it, but
to keep them, which I would have loved to do that. That's a nice, dark, sick, twisted version of, like, Allura's sabotaging the war effort to keep her Voltron family.
There is a universe where that happens.
Yeah, sure.
But it was just beautiful to kind of see how much she was willing to take on to herself.
And at the end of the day, like, you know, we keep sort of using this term boys' toys show because that's sort of the reality of what we came into. We sort of were taking on this franchise that was very merchandise-based and trying to sell toys to young boys, essentially. And at the end of the day, it became this story, almost a Allura story solely, when you really sort of, like, step back and look at it. But it was this sort of face-off of two strong women that were approaching these problems from very different angles. Mm-hmm. And who the heck would have known that would have, you know, that would have been the
outcome? I think we didn't even really know it at the beginning.
We didn't. We really didn't. It evolved.
But it was nice. It was nice because when we told Kimberly, and of course she was sad, and we're like, listen, we know. It's never personal. We're not like, you know, I don't like that Kimberly. Let's kill her. Like,
at the very last minute.
But it's like, you know.
We also told Neil.
Neil, and we try to be kind and, like, let people know. And so we let her know ahead of time so she's not just reading the script and, like, what the hell?
What?
And she was sad, but we just let her know, like, listen, it's Allura's story. Like, she is literally the hero. She's not dying to further another hero story. She is the hero. Like, this war ends with her. And then I made her a completely fake promise that I couldn't really make her.
I have
no control over what they do with Voltron, but I was like, listen, if we do any more episodes, I'm bringing her back. Right. I'm not making this show without her. But then, like,
because there is no Voltron without
Allura. I have no control what they do with it after this point.
But there is
8 seasons, now we need a movie.
Honestly, like, the sort of post-credits thing was leaving that door open.
Yeah.
You know, with the lions taking off and seeing the, you know, Allura Nebula, I think in our minds it was sort of her quintessence coalescing and
reforming, essentially. Yeah. Kind of coming back together. So, you can do whatever you want with that. Like, yeah, have fun, guys.
Yeah, but honestly, it was a door left open. Like, there's mm-hmm. nobody ever really dies in comics and animation.
I feel like comics and animation and sci-fi in and of itself is a door left open.
Right.
Yeah. If the word sci-fi exists in a definition of your show,
this was
there's
like
a door
one
left
step
open.
Back from the ending of Iron Giant. It was like, we didn't actually, like, show all the pieces going in the thing.
Yeah, there's an Allura in hand that's just, like, crawling through the face.
Allura's hand is jumping through the snow.
That would have been terrible. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, I think there's this misconception because Allura is a woman of color, and so I think a lot of fans only looking at it superficially were like, oh, the woman of color was killed off. And it's like... Yeah, there is a trope of people of color dying to save the stupid white people around them. Like, I understand that trope. But the problem with that superficial interpretation is that they're ignoring the fact that she's the main character mm-hmm. here.
Well, there's that. And also, just to put it on the table, our original pitch was that they were all going to die.
Whoa! Yeah.
And that got taken off the table for...
I love it. It's teamwork.
Well
done. Yeah. And honestly, like, in my opinion, that would have been an easier, like, window to bring them back if they all disappeared.
Exactly.
You could pop them all back anytime and you right. got the team again. Easy spinoff. But
so
it
would
just
if,
been
like
a
litter of bodies. It would have been just disappear.
It would have been. Yeah. Okay. We're not yeah. showing, like, look, we showed the melted, Lothar. Like, Lothar body. But
it would have been
nobody's
same,
getting Cronenberged in this yeah. scenario.
Same scene, except we, you know, instead of Allura taking it upon herself, they all would have agreed to do it together and they would have gone in and essentially taken Voltron out of the equation.
Right.
That was something that we actually really believed. For even from early on, we introduced this idea that Alphor had helped to create this thing, not realizing how dangerous it could be. Kind of like, you know, the person who created the atom bomb. And like yeah. having that guilt. And so having Allura be part of the team that took Voltron out of the equation, right. and now that weapon isn't available to anyone, that was a big deal. But we were told that that was too sad.
You broke chat. Alexis is in chat going, rocking back and forth, broken. Like, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah,
everyone take
a
drink of your
non-alcoholic beverage that she choice. Typed.
Yeah. Oh, no, everyone's just, like, losing their noise. It's great. I love it.
It was, in a strange way, I think, a beautiful sacrifice that Allura is allowed mm-hmm. to make. And also, really, when you think about it, if it had to come down to any one person, she's... From, like, a logistical standpoint, she's the only one powerful enough, and we've sort of demonstrated it uh-huh. through, you know, it's her being a life giver.
So we've had a lot of characters, like, who've been on, like, the death table. We've thrown them all out there at some point.
Right.
But they all had to kind of get thrown out at a point in the story where it made sense that their death would have, like, been worth it. Like, for Pidge, it would have been saving her family. Like, right. if she had died to save her family. For Hunk, it would have been saving Earth, which almost happened.
Hunk was, like, and inches away.
No!
Yeah. We got a yes, and then, like, you know, they're like, who are you going to replace her with? And we're like, a lady. And they said, no.
Yeah.
Oh! Well, would Romel have been the pilot?
It would have been... It was going to be Aksha.
Yeah.
It was going to be a redemption arc
yeah.
that took place over this last season of... It's not about who you were, it's about who you are, and the fact that she's done some bad things,
wow.
but she truly believes in doing the right thing and right. moving forward, and she could have been a viable part of that team.
But I also would
That's
argue
incredible.
That like there's
wow.
just there wouldn't have been enough time, I think, for
yeah.
everybody to, like, absorb that. If we had, like, a
yeah.
3-season run at, like, bringing her in,
mm-hmm.
getting her settled, and then having her... That would have made more sense.
Yeah, that was yeah. a...
But Hunk's was especially tragic. Like, it was the moment where they were gonna, where they were taking the Roby stuff.
Uh-huh.
And there was, like, that ticking time bomb going off. And he literally sees his family, but he's never actually, like, interacted with them. So
oh.
he only gets to look at them.
Oh, my God.
And see that they're alive. Wow. And then he's like, I gotta get this thing out of here.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So sorry, everybody.
No. But he didn't die.
Dark.
He didn't die. We didn't kill anyone.
Speaking of dark storylines, Princess Pony in the hashtag did some fan art of Evil Chip.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
very fast. So check out the hashtag ABTV Voltron to check that out. It makes me very happy.
Are there red glowing eyes?
No, it's black and white, but he does look very happy.
Yeah, but Allura's Death was the only one that made sense from a power standpoint and even from the story standpoint that we were setting up with Enerva. And then also just on, I know like it's probably going to be highly contested, but on a feminist level from my standpoint, the man is always one who gets to be the hero. Like Armageddon, Bruce Willis sacrifices himself to send, you know, friggin' Ben Affleck back. And like if basically Keith had gone like, I'll do it, and then, you know, Allura had to stand on the sidelines and be like, good thing Keith saved the day, I'd not be happy. Like
I want
my women to be able to save the day too. And even if it's about making that ultimate sacrifice, if people want to interpret that as sexist, then that's fine, but we're just gonna have to agree to disagree.
And, I mean, Keith tried to do the heroic sacrifice at one point. It didn't work.
And they went, you guys went, no, don't do that.
And was just like, excuse me.
We tried to kill Keith,
This was
that's not a lie.
You guys apparently tried to kill everyone.
Because we were told we couldn't kill Shiro. And like, well, we don't need two leaders. We'll kill Keith. And they said, you can't do that.
But also, by the way, look, we're not kill happy people. We're not. We don't kill for the sake of killing. We're like... It's a journey, and there's something meaningful to, I think, everybody's death. And so when you even look at like melted Lotor corpse, like, he basically had done to him what he had done to so many other people. So there's like a sort of a give and a take there.
Yeah.
You know? I love it.
And like a show where, and I don't want to rag on any other shows that skirt around death or anything like that, because again, they are writing for a certain demographic.
Sure. Absolutely.
But I always appreciate when shows have, you know, actions have consequences.
There's consequences.
And sometimes character death is a really good way of conveying that. Yeah. And I think for a lot of other people forget that Allura in season one is the same character that picked up Shiro, threw him out of room right as the doors were closing, and basically could have died in that moment.
That's right.
She was sacrificing herself. So it's not like this is out of character for her.
Yeah, and Coran said like 15 different times, like, you know, what about the risks? You could not come back from this. If you give all your quintessence to the Balmera, if you give all your quintessence to making this gigantic wormhole to transport Zarkon's ship, like,
right. if you take the darkness
and
into yourself.
And every time she would say, like, I know the risks. And
YOLO.
No. Kind of sorta, right?
Until she walks into the west with the other elves.
That's right.
Exactly. That's right. Or into the void with Onerva. I love that she had to do a hard reset on Onerva's brain, and then we could fix things. Like, she's the only one that would have been able to do that in any capacity.
Well,
And it's allowing Onerva to maybe experience the consequences that came as a result of her actions and really understand what those...
Allowing her to get past like the cloud of all of the pain she's felt and realize, like, remember the good things. Because sometimes you can get so bogged down with the negativity that you can forget what it was that you loved about a thing in the first place.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she was Altain, and she loved discovery, and she loved knowledge, and she reached out with Alphor, and she helped multiple people before, you know, they started this Quintessence Comet project that kind of messed everything up. So she just kind of had to show her these things.
She had, you know, a heart.
Yeah. At one point.
At one point.
Is there anything else that you... Because we're hitting the end of our time. Is there anything else you guys want to touch on now, or should we save a few things for next week?
You know, look, I think Lauren made a really good point in that, you know, sometimes you sort of lose sight of the good things for, you know, maybe some of the negative things. We'd only hope that, you know, the sort of big postmortem from the fandom at large, even those that are super unhappy with the way season 8 turned out, sort of looks back on the series with positive feelings, because I think while feelings might get hurt and feelings might be, people might feel betrayed by like story decisions, like the show was made with nothing but like love and good intentions and positivity. And yes, we told some hard stories to tell and characters came to certain conclusions that weren't like the most popular decisions, but mm-hmm. we were just trying to tell a story that like looked beyond the campiness and beyond the colorful robotic silliness to tell something that felt a bit more true and a bit more real and had, as one of our execs would always say, stakes and consequences.
No, stakes and urgency.
Stakes and urgency.
Stakes and urgency. Yeah. Stakes and urgency.
That was going to be a
that was going to be a restaurant. Food court. That's right.
That's one of Breakfast Owl's new chains. Yeah. It's part of Hunk's food empire. Stakes and urgency.
But we can, you know, we can leave all the other stuff for our other mm-hmm. show.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. And Princess Ponies has made a new version with red eyes.
Red eyes, ready blood.
You asked for red eyes, and in chat they went, "Oh, and red eyes."
That's awesome.
And all for the red eyes.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for joining us this week. This has been
absolutely
lovely. Are there any other projects you're working on that you can tell us about?
No.
Okay. NDAs it is.
I am working on getting my floors redone.
Yes.
And getting the popcorn scraped off of my ceilings. Which is a lot more expensive than I realized it was going to be. And moving all of my crap out of the house so that these people can do this work, and that is a hell of a project that I would not wish on anyone.
And I just took a week off with my wife to Marie Kondo our entire house.
Dang.
So nice. She didn't come over anything, but we definitely
did you actually put it all in a pile?
She did with her clothes, and it was pretty epic.
Okay.
Like, my pile went to your sister to eBay off. So that was pile of toys. Like, her sister is a
anything
sweet human being, and like, will like, yeah. During the course of Voltron, during production, like, super weighty, dark times, I would just go on, like, eBay and just be like, buy, and a pile of toys stacked up behind me that I never opened up.
Yeah, retail had a cardboard box for it.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
And then he had a kid and said, oh, no, I don't need all this stuff.
Yeah.
And return to sender.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, that sounds fun. All right.
eBay. There you go.
Where can the people go on social media if they would like to keep up with you?
All of the same places. Art of Lornem on Twitter. The Best Lore Montgomery on Instagram, though I will say the Voltron posts are like kind of over at this point.
Like, yeah.
So don't maybe follow me now if you're just coming for Voltron. You'll probably be a little disappointed.
Same for me. JDS247 on something and JDS77 on the other thing. There you go. Underscore in between those.
So I'm gonna unfollow you guys now because
it's over.
No.
And that's fine.
But if you like any of my other artwork, you're more than welcome to stay.
I like all of your other artwork.
All right.
It's so pretty.
It is. All right. Thanks again for coming, you guys.
Thank you for having us. You guys have been awesome this entire time.
And we'll be back next week.
That's right.
Yes, yay! We will. I'm going to save that little announcement for a little bit. Megan, where can the people find you?
You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at the Manguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. I really wanted to say, I wanted to give a quick shout out to Mark and Emma and Alexis, who all were in the hashtag tonight. We miss you guys and we love you. And
you
hopefully we'll be seeing you soon.
And on the live chat in Alexis's case.
Love you, Alexis.
You can follow Yellow Lion Mark Donica at Mark B. Donica, Red Lion Emma 5 at Emma 5, and Blue Lauren.
Blue Lauren.
Yeah. Please, Blue Lion.
It's contagious.
Sorry. At ATORS890. I am Katie Cullen. You can follow me all over the social medias as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. I am also on an Overwatch podcast called On the Point. Guys, we will be back for the final episode of ABTV Voltron. Next week, we are doing a series retrospective. Same lion time, same lion channel. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.